it's only computer nerds. It's only gamblers and speculators. It's only criminals. It's only a few small companies. It's only one company in the S&P 500. It's only a small country. And then I said, it's always going to be, it's only until it's just fucking everybody.
All right, we are back today with a fun one. I know you recognize that voice. We have the one and only Ben, aka BTC Sessions. We cover a range of subjects from Bitcoin versus altcoins, why sound money is so important. We even flip the script and get a why is Ben bullish session, along with many other things. I hope you enjoy this one today as Ben gets after it, and I'll catch you after the show. All right, welcome back. Today we have the host of one of your favorite Bitcoin learning shows, another Canadian Bitcoiner, and he now has over 4.5 million views on his YouTube channel. We have Ben with BTC Sessions. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Hey, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Oh, of course. I couldn't resist the opportunity when I noticed we were following each other on Twitter, and I just had to have you. So, you know, if you could give the listeners a little bit of background about who you are, if they don't know you, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah. So I've been in around the Bitcoin space for about 7 years now. Spent a good couple of years of learning and just kind of working my way through how Bitcoin works. Just kind of trial and error on my own and finding whatever learning material I could. And then a couple of years in, I kind of noticed there wasn't a lot of great video tutorial step-by-step stuff out there. And so I figured I would throw my hat in the ring, and I started making weekly videos on whatever topic I felt like covering, you know, basics like how to get a wallet, how to set up hardware, how to run a node, stuff like that. And I've been doing it ever since. I just celebrated the 5-year anniversary of BTC Sessions. And yeah, like you said, over 4.5 million views across all the videos so far, which is absolutely insane. So I'm just happy to be here, and I'm happy that anybody watches it at all.
Well, congrats on making it to the 5-year mark. That's a pretty big barrier. And obviously the 4.5 million views is pretty awesome. You know, thanks for all the work you've done as well. I know a lot of people in the Bitcoin community have used it. I personally have used it on multiple occasions to help learn. It's definitely a great resource to have. Did you have a background in like video and that kind of the world of, you know, video tutorials, I guess you would call it, before you got into before you started BTC Sessions?
So there were a handful of things that culminated in those skill sets being put together. Funny enough, my previous job before I started diving into the space and actually working at Bitcoin companies and everything, I taught little kids how to break dance for about a decade. So I would go to schools, and basically when the dance unit came, instead of the phys ed teacher saying, "Hey, you know, I'm teaching you this and we're going to do square dancing," I would come in and I'd do like hip hop and break dancing and different things, popping, locking, all that stuff. And I would spend a week and the kids would all learn a routine. And it was anywhere from like kindergarten all the way up to the grade 12 high school kind of thing. So yeah, I did that for a while. And that was kind of, I guess, the teaching aspect of it, because teaching is very similar regardless of what you're actually teaching. As long as you understand the concepts and you can break them down into bite-sized pieces enough, then whatever you're trying to convey will get through. And I think having taught kids that were like 5 years old, very much made me examine how I was going to teach Bitcoin, in that I've got to, you know, everybody always says, explain it like I'm five. Well, I did that for 10 years. So here I am. And in terms of the video stuff, you know, I was in the arts. I sang with an a cappella group for years. I did the dance thing. So I was used to like being in front of cameras and stuff like that. So that was fine. And then in terms of actual video editing, I had done a bunch of different videos just from like vacation stuff, practicing editing that way. So I had like a decent knowledge of it. And so I just kind of ran with it, and here we are.
That's funny. You had a lot of different little things leading you right to the end result. And, you know, we got the, I guess we have the best dancer in Bitcoin on the show today. So
we'll have to, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they'll have to be dance off of or something.
Maybe Bitcoin 2022, we can organize a Bitcoiner dance off and see if you can take home the crown.
That'd be great. I love it.
That's awesome, man. Well, so what, how did you get exposed to Bitcoin? Like, you know, you said you were in it for 7 years and you started BTC sessions in 2016. What was your initial exposure? What made you dive in?
So I, like a lot of people, you have a certain number of touch points before you actually kind of decide to pursue it. And for me, as with a lot of people as well, I saw the price points moving up through 2013. So I saw a handful of articles from different tech related blogs and stuff like that, because I was still back in that time. I would actually flip MacBooks. Like, I'd buy a MacBook that was like, didn't have a lot of RAM or had a small hard drive, and I just replace those parts and load it up with software and then sell it. And so I was mildly interested in just general technology, nothing special, but, you know, through that, I came across a few articles. I noticed it when it was like double digits. I noticed it when it went over $100 and I thought I missed the boat. And then at the end of the year in 2013, when I saw it go over $1,000, I said, oh my God, I really missed the boat, but maybe I should do some reading and kind of see what's going on here, because it's either some like big scam or there's something more to it. So I spent a few months just kind of trying to digest everything that I could. And luckily I read enough over the next, I'd say about 3 months, to get a cursory knowledge of how it worked, what it did, what it didn't do, what the threats were, what the, you know, non-threats were, or what would have been considered FUD if it ever came up. And the week that I bought for the first time was the week that Mt. Gox collapsed. So I didn't have money on Mt. Gox, but I bought some Bitcoin and I had been telling friends, hey, I'm going to buy some Bitcoin. And then all of a sudden the headlines are Bitcoin got hacked. It's all over. Bitcoin's over, because nobody understood what was going on. And I was lucky enough to have read enough at that point that I was like, that doesn't make any sense. It didn't get hacked. It was a poorly run business and people lost their money because it was with a custodian. So I understood that. And I understood then almost immediately that the media had no idea what they were talking about in regards to Bitcoin. So I said, well, what am I here for? What do I think makes Bitcoin work? And unless any of that changes, why would I leave? So I continued to stack, but I continued to watch my quote unquote investment go down by like 80% over the course of the next calendar year. But, you know, nothing changed though. It still worked. So I just stuck it out and I just kept gradually accumulating when I could. I did some errands for some local Bitcoiners that ran Bitcoin ATMs and tried to stack that way and earn some Bitcoin. And yeah, so that was it. I basically just kind of orange pilled myself and then kept going.
How was that process to learn all the fundamentals about Bitcoin back in 2013, 2014, before there was anything out about Bitcoin?
Oh, it sucked, man. It sucked. There was nothing to watch. Like, Andreas had some good, like, out the gate, this is why Bitcoin's important, and this is kind of some of the impact that it could have. But in terms of how to actually do anything, it was like, oh yeah, read this post on Bitcoin Talk, or, you know, here's this poorly done web page that kind of explains how it works with a few screenshots. And, you know, us and all of the content like assumed that you knew the inner workings of Bitcoin, or a lot of it did. It wasn't easy. And so that was very much the reason for the channel. I was like, is there a video where can somebody just show me how to do this? And the answer at the time was mostly no. So I would just stumble through it and mess up a bunch and be like, okay, well, I did it. I figured out what was wrong there. And then when I started the channel, I would basically do that same thing. And then I'd do it over again, but with a camera and less screw ups. So there we go.
That's funny the way you had to iterate just like by yourself, sitting back at home and trial by fire, basically, until you got it right. Mm-hmm. It's awesome how far it's come. You know, the space is so much educational material now, and you know, there's podcasts and everything. Like, for example, for me, I was similar. I had a lot of touch points, but my touch points were a lot more spread out than yours. They weren't in a mm-hmm. 1 year span. They were over a handful of years. And then by the time I finally, you know, wanted to do the research for the first time and actually figure out what was going on, I was, you know, like able to find Preston Pish's podcast and Robert Breedlove's writings and just so many different things that made it so easy for me to learn, you know, rather than having to just like theorize by myself in my basement, as I'm sure you were.
Oh, it's astounding how much amazing content there is now. Like if you stumble into the space. Now, I will say, when it's a bull market, you have to contend with a lot of noise, right? Like there's a lot of scammy garbage out there that you have to find your way around. But the beautiful thing this time around that I've never seen before is there's a lot of people coming into the space and moving almost directly into Bitcoin only. And I think, like, I can't be sure exactly what it is, but I think part of that is because of the quality of content and the cohesive narrative that Bitcoiners have put out there across all different content, saying like, this is what we can do for the world. This is why, you know, some of these other things don't make sense in the context of what we're trying to do and actually have this thing be decentralized and immutable and censorship resistant and sound money and all of those things. It makes a lot more sense when you see it from multiple angles, from multiple people, instead of kind of like the piecemeal spotty narratives from a lot of other camps.
Completely agree. And, you know, for myself, I'm similar in that the realm that you just described, because for years, you know, I followed a couple people on Twitter that were big into Bitcoin and a few other just places where I would interact with Bitcoin, quote unquote, and I owned a little bit of it. But by the time I like really got going with it, I had seen all the ICO crap that happened in 2017, and I wasn't interested in any of like the little ones, and I only bought Bitcoin. And then I had a couple weeks where I was like, well, you know, maybe Ethereum will do the same thing. So I did a little bit of research. I was like, I want to do research before I buy it. Did a little bit of research. I was like, wait, like this is just not it. And so I just stuck with Bitcoin. Like you said, I've been Bitcoin only my whole time in, which is, I think, is kind of cool. It goes to show that all the content that people have put out. What was it for you where you started to be able to see and differentiate between like Bitcoin and the altcoins and Ethereum and everything?
Yeah. So I unfortunately was not one of those people that went straight into Bitcoin only, but I will say that my exposure to dabbling in, you know, some trashy altcoins was very, very minimal. Even in like the height of the bull market in 2017, when everybody's going insane over the ICOs and going insane over altcoins and everything, I think maybe 5 or 10% of my money, you know, kind of skirted into altcoins. And then I realized there's just, I don't have any conviction in anything here, and, you know, pulled it all back out. But I think what truly kind of led me to where I am now is, again, taking a step back and examining, okay, why am I here? And it was kind of the promise of sound money. Like I was saying, that's decentralized and immutable and censorship resistant, all of those important things that we don't have with our money right now. And so then I started saying, okay, well, how is that possible with Bitcoin? Like, what makes it possible in Bitcoin? Well, you know, the hash rate protecting the network, the fact that there's a cap supply, the fact that the rules that govern the network are not easily changed. In fact, it's near impossible at this point to actually change those underlying rules. And then also that an individual can easily and very affordably run a full copy of the entire Bitcoin blockchain, as well as the rules, and verify and enforce said rules themselves. And so when I start looking at all of these other projects, they just don't tick all of the boxes. And the other part of it is there's no designated leaders. There's no like, oh, this is the guy who we go to when we have questions, because that puts people in a dangerous position of being elevated to like a deity in that particular realm. Like what Vitalik says, Vitalik gets, right? Like if he says we're going to do something, everybody else is like, great, we'll do that tomorrow, right? It's pretty much whatever he wants. And even something like Charlie Lee with Litecoin, where he's sold, aka dumped all his Litecoin at the top of the 2017 bull run, he still has influence over the project, as much as people may say that's not the case. Very much is. And so to not have any discernible leaders in Bitcoin, have the ability to easily actually verify and enforce those rules yourself, and setting a precedent of not just willy-nilly changing the very foundation on which everything is built, kind of got me to the point where I was like, nothing else is checking all these boxes for me. And so it wasn't this closed-minded act of, well, I'm in Bitcoin and I've got all my money there, so everything else is stupid, I want everything else to die. No, it was, what do I want out of a decentralized global money, and what's necessary for me to get there, and what has those things? And when I looked, nothing had them except Bitcoin. And that continues to be the case. So here I sit and I've just got Bitcoin.
Exactly. Once you really start to dive into each and every single one, because that's the thing about like the quote unquote Bitcoin maximalists that a lot of people say, it's like, oh, they're toxic, oh, they don't view any other things. It's like, no, you look and you evaluate pretty much every other thing, but it has to stand up to the standard that Bitcoin has laid. And it has to also not be able to just be added on top of Bitcoin, because anything that matters will just be added on top of Bitcoin in time.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it saves you so much time when you know what you're looking for, when you know the qualities that you're looking for, and you can quickly just go down a list and say, okay, does it have that? And then eventually something doesn't get ticked and you're like, okay, I can dismiss that now. I don't need that. It's so much easier than having somebody pitch what it's trying to do and how it's trying to do it and all of these different things, instead of just being like, does it have what I want? It doesn't.
It's pretty black and white at that point. Yeah. You you mentioned early on in the last statement that you saw a need for sound money. Mm-hmm. How were you able to, you know that there was a need for sound money in the first place?
That was, again, part of the Bitcoin rabbit hole that I went down of questioning what is money, right? And that's kind of everybody's initial journey into Bitcoin. Now, some get wrapped up in altcoins and like blockchain buzzwords, they don't go far enough down that rabbit hole. But for Bitcoiners, you kind of get to a place where you realize what a massive impact money has on every aspect of our lives and how it shapes our personalities and our decisions that we make every day. And with a money that requires you to think short term, because you can't just get a job that you're good at and earn money and just put away some money for later for retirement. No, you then also have to do all of these other things, like tossing money into financial instruments you don't understand and hope that they go well enough, that the Ponzi scheme that is the current financial infrastructure goes well long enough for you to survive retirement. And it seems to be kind of wavering right now, but it changes so much when all of a sudden you have a money where you can literally just focus on what you're good at, earn your money, and just save. And that's it. You don't have to be forced into rolling the dice in hopes of making it to retirement. You just save your money. And I think it forced me to examine kind of the deception that was happening with money. Because when you think about it, you're trading your time, you're trading, say, an hour of your time for an X amount of dollars. And at the time that you do that, your understanding of what those dollars can purchase is what they can purchase at that moment in time. But if you hold those dollars, especially over the past year, if you hold those dollars and then a year later you go to exchange them for goods or services, what has effectively happened is those dollars don't go nearly as far. And you've lost, depending on what you're purchasing, 10, 20%, maybe more of your purchasing power of what you're trying to buy. So that's the same as somebody coming along and saying, oh, you did an hour worth of work for me. Great. Well, you do that hour worth of work, and I know we agreed on this wage, but actually I'm going to give you 20% less just because you're not spending it right away. And who would take that deal? Nobody would take that deal, but that's the deal we actually take every single day. So it you know, Bitcoin catapults you down that rabbit hole of what does that change? And you can go into the types of products that are being produced with this high time preference in mind, trinkety garbage that's going to be broken next year that you're not going to want, instead of buying long-term things that will benefit your life in the long run, instead of buying healthy food that will actually make you feel good and have longevity and be able to enjoy your life. All of these things get perverted when the money incentivizes short-term thinking. And since going off a fiat standard and starting to live on a Bitcoin standard, I've noticed my life has improved quite a bit. So yeah, I don't know. It's a natural progression of Bitcoin, I think. I think everybody hits those touch points and starts to understand at different paces, but that's where I'm at right now.
I think you nailed that right on the head with one thing that you said that stood out was money shapes our personalities and decisions. And we don't understand that when we're just living in the world as is, in the fiat money world. We're just going about our days and, you know, we do our thing. We go to work and we go to the bars with our friends and we go to dinner and whatnot. We don't really think about the impact that this short-term outlook on money has until we really start doing the research and then changing our standard. So what ways have you actually seen your life and, you know, almost like personal mental health and all those things improve, like you just mentioned, since being on a Bitcoin standard?
Yeah. So one of the things is just the freedom in which I operate in terms of how I've structured my life. So I know this isn't necessarily possible in every single line of work, but I started gradually moving towards a lifestyle where just nobody could tell me what to do. I no longer have a boss. I no longer have anybody that's saying, hey, you got to be here at this time. I set my full schedule. So that was one of the goals that I had. And I just started saving more than I spent, or spending less than I earned is another way of saying it. Living within my means. Secondly, I started looking at, okay, what are my purchases? What am I actually buying here? What is, you know, what am I getting that actually has a meaningful impact on my life, that will last a long time, that is going to be used? And what's the crap that I don't need? And so my purchases changed in that if I go and buy something, like I moved a year and a bit ago. And so we're looking at, you know, grabbing something for the house. We needed a kitchen table. And so we're looking at online and, you know, there's some okay tables that were a little bit cheaper. And then we're looking and we're thinking, okay, well, we know a guy, one of our good friends that can build amazing stuff. And so we got this beautiful table made by him with like actual like granite on top, and he like chopped the wood himself and stained it and did it all. And, you know, this table is going to last generations. Like, this table is like an heirloom now. Same with just everything that I purchased, including health is another big one. You know, all that fiat food, that's one of my vices is trash food, because I used to be on the go so much, and you just pick up whatever, you know, especially when you're younger, like when I moved out, I was just eating crap because you're out. Oh, I'll grab some McDonald's. Oh, I'll grab whatever. And you don't realize how it makes you feel. And also it's more expensive to eat healthy. Let's be honest. It's notably more expensive to be slapping a steak on the grill every day, or to be, you know, having fresh produce and all of these different things. It's much more affordable to go and grab a bunch of pizza pops and shove them in your freezer, right? A bunch of like whatever I don't know what the States ones are, the pizza, those little like pizza circles that are like stuffed full of pizza guts or whatever. I can't remember what they're called, but
like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like I can't even remember right now either, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Pizza pockets, those ones. Yeah. You know, all that kind of stuff. Like that was the easy way out, and you don't learn how to cook, and you just grab whatever, you order food all the time. You just waste so much money on like ordering stuff in and getting stuff on the go, thinking that it's cheaper. But then when you take the time and say, hey, you know, like I feel like shit. I feel awful. I'm not getting the most out of my life. I'm too tired to keep up with my kids. They're upset because I can't, you know, play with them because I'm too exhausted from a long day. And then you start looking and saying, well, what if I change that? What if I spend the initial extra money on the healthy food, spend the initial extra time on the learning how to cook some stuff, and see how I feel? And all of a sudden there's this switch that flicks, and oh man, I feel great. I've got so much energy, and I'm working out, and I'm, you know, I look better, and I have more energy for my kids, and me and my wife feel better together. We go out more. All of those things kind of culminate, and it comes from that low time preference mentality. That's perfectly in line with Bitcoin. You're postponing what you really want. You're postponing the reward in order to you know, take a little bit of pain now and have the gain later. And that's very much in line with Bitcoin, right? You save your money, you save your resources for now, so that later on you can partake in the fruits of your labor, and maybe they will have grown. And same thing here. I'm taking some of my earned money and some of my time and saying, all right, I'm going to kind of up my meat consumption. I want, you know, higher protein meals. I'm going to cut down on like the carb sugary crap. And I'm going to learn how to cook some things that are actually good, that I enjoy. And all of a sudden, it just has so many impacts across the board. You're actually saving more money. You feel better. You're getting more out of life. And so, yeah, it's been astounding, kind of the changes. And they don't all come at once, but as you start diving into kind of the ethos of that a lot of Bitcoiners exude, it does massively change your life.
Yeah, it's completely spot on. You know, you start to go through it and look at the different foods and what's in them, and you reevaluate pretty much everything. And for those listening at home and aren't able to see Ben, he looks great. He's ripped up. He's busting out of his shirt. So he's putting in the work. He's not all talk. So
maybe it's just an undersized shirt or something. I don't know.
you put it on too hot of a dry setting or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like for me personally, I have some stomach problems, and so I had to, you know, reevaluate my diet a couple times over the past, I think 7 years now. So it started, I was lactose intolerant. I became lactose intolerant when I was about 20. And then over the past year became either gluten intolerant or maybe celiac. I haven't got tested yet, but my body just can't handle it anymore. So I had to start reevaluating my food decisions. And then as I started looking into it and going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, and I'm like, okay, this just makes too much sense. And everything, you know, that's going on in our food industry is just like so out of whack with like our individual, like what our bodies actually need. And so then, you know, I've done way better with dieting and working out more. And you just like, you feel better. You have more energy. You wake up and you're just like kind of ready to go. it's so nice because I haven't had that since I was, you know, 21 in college and, you know, playing sports every day. That kind of thing is just like a completely different mindset shift, which is great. Have you noticed, like, just you obviously have a passion for what you do. And have you noticed like that translates as well with just being happier in general, of being able to do what you love doing, spend more time with the family and all those things working together?
Yeah, actually it's another point of what changed for me was I'm no longer obsessed with just like working and making money. I've kind of shifted my life so that I get, you know, maximum enjoyment out of it. So I started kind of building once I kind of went off on my own and focused on just the show and figured out that, hey, I can just, this is it. This is all what I can do and actually make a living out of it. And then I looked at what I was doing and kind of what my income was. And I said, well, you know, I'm pretty comfortable where I'm at right now. What I could do is I could work even more and cram more hours in the day and work more days and make a ton more money. Or I can continue doing what I'm doing right now, which is I do 3 shows a week. I do a tutorial typically. I do a news show and I do a panel show at the end of the week, which is just like a fun hangout. I enjoy doing all of those things. And then every other moment of my time is for me. So like realistically, I'm kind of working 3, maybe 4 days a week. I'm doing better than I ever did at a salary job. And now I get time to learn another language. I get time to work out at any point of the day whenever I feel like it's time. I get to, you know, have lunch with my wife every single day and grill up a couple steaks and have steak and salad together. I get to go out to the lake with my family regularly. I get to next month literally leave the country for 5 weeks and just gallivant around Greece traveling. And then just kind of doing the show from wherever we happen to be. And again, that's 3 days out of the week and I've got 4 days to spend with my family. So that, again, like there was the possibility of let's just cram as many hours together as possible and just make a ton of money. But I reevaluated that and I said, well, what's the point of that? Sure, I make a lot of money, but I would lose the most important part, which is why I started doing this in the first place, which is for my kids and my wife. And so why change? I'm happier in terms of what I'm doing and when I get to do it and how I get to do it than I've ever been. And I don't plan on changing that. And it's a beautiful thing. I'm eternally grateful.
That is truly beautiful. You get to, you know, do what matters most to you, spend that time with your kids and your wife and your family. And at the same time, you're building something for your future to set yourself up and set them up and help out other people as well. So it's pretty cool. So thank you for everything that you do in the space. And I'm glad it helps you as well in that. So really, you know, a little shift. You host a panel every week. Why are you bullish? Yeah. And so I'd love to hear, you know, some reasons that you are excited and you are bullish about the future and where Bitcoin is going and what you see in the current environment.
So I love when we start seeing articles like, looks like it didn't pan out for Bitcoin. Looks like it's not going to become the global reserve currency. Because I've seen it all before. I've seen the, it's over. And I've seen it through bear markets and through bull markets. And it's all the same FUD and crap that we see time and time again. I'm bullish because there's so many people out there that are still so convinced that it's all going to come crumbling down. And I'm bullish because they're doing that at a point when there's never been a brighter future for Bitcoin. We literally have the first nation state on the globe that has passed a bill to make it legal tender, which comes into effect just over 2 months from now. We have the best in terms of the best environment I've ever seen in terms of being able to transact easily, even in the face of when the blockchain is busy, when there's a lot of on-chain transactions happening. The Lightning Network works fantastically now. I use it every single day and it's beautiful. And now it's working for an entire country worth of people, or is about to be working for an entire country worth of people. The narrative around the ecological stuff is just so off base, and it takes 2 minutes of digging to discover that anybody that's bringing up that topic really doesn't have the faintest clue of what the energy used for Bitcoin is actually used for, and that it doesn't apply per transaction, and that it doesn't scale linearly with the number of transactions. Like, there's this, the amount of misinformation there is astounding, and it's inevitable that it will be disproven. Just everything around the space, it keeps working. The only thing that changes is if people think it's working or not. And mostly it's if people that don't know about Bitcoin think it's working or not. It's all just sentiment. And once you've been through a cycle or two, you recognize it and you get to just sit back and say, great, I don't even need to argue about it anymore. I get to just sit back, relax, stack sats, enjoy my life, and just know that it's still there, it's still working. And you know, every 10 minutes, another block, tick tock.
Exactly. And, you know, no need to, like you said, no need to argue anymore. You can just send them a Nick Carter article or send them a Guy Swan reading to one of your friends who brings it up and be like, hey, yeah, I get what you're saying, but it's not right. Here you go. Yeah. Listen to this, read this, and you'll start to see that. And like you mentioned, there's just so many bullish things happening in the space with like a country adopting Bitcoin. I don't think many people thought we'd see that this soon. It was pretty ironic. The night before the announcement, I was having a conversation with my buddy, and we were talking about when he asked me when I thought a nation state or a country would put it on, or like hold it as a reserve. Mm-hmm. And I guessed that it would be about a year away. I said there was like a 75% chance within 12 months. And he goes, and I was about to say before your next birthday. And I was like, wait, your next birthday is what, in like 2 weeks, right? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, okay, I can pretty much guarantee it before your second birthday.
Yeah.
And the announcement comes out the next day, and I text him. I was like, guess it's before this birthday as well. And so it's wild how fast things are heating up in the space. And I think it's only going to go ahead.
It's crazy. Like, I watching that moment happen, because I was there when he announced it, and like the crazy thing was that the people there, most of them got it. Most of them got exactly how important, what a monumental day that was to hear those words and see that it was happening. But the world at large really still has no clue the magnitude of a shift that this has begun. Because at first, again, I think I tweeted this out like a couple days after. I was like, it's only computer nerds. It's only gamblers and speculators. It's only criminals. It's only a few small companies. It's only one company in the S&P 500. It's only a small country. And then I said, it's always going to be it's only until it's just fucking everybody. Like, it's just, there's the context in which they're always saying it's only this is always monumentally larger than the last time they said it. And so it just keeps on playing out. So, you know, soon it's going to only be a few Central and South American countries. Soon it'll only be a few small countries in Africa. And those ones will be like the bad ones, they'll say. And then all of a sudden it'll be like, you know, some slightly higher up nations, some second world countries. And then all of a sudden it'll be like a first world country will be like, well, we're going to put a little bit of this on the reserves just in case. And like at that point, what are you arguing against? Like, sorry, Professor Hanke, it's not going to pan out for you. No matter how many angry Twitter posts you make, it's not happening. You know, this is not stopping.
It's funny how long people are willing to be wrong and continue to double down without having done the research. Like,
yeah,
I like you see these people, you see the Charlie Mungers, the Warren Buffetts, the Hankies, the Peter Schiffs that have been wrong about this for closing in on a decade now and continue to say the same things. And it's pretty evident by the way they speak that they haven't actually dove in and tried to figure it out yet because they're smart individuals. It's
just not in their best interest to understand it. Because if they did understand it and then admitted that they understood it, they would then also have to admit that a lot of their life's work was in vain. And that's a hard thing to do. It's a very hard thing to do. Like in the instance of Peter Schiff, his entire being is based on the narrative that we need to return to a gold standard. And he's so almost right, it hurts. Right? It's so close. He was just incorrect about the medium. And imagine devoting your life to a concept that so closely mirrors a group of like young goofballs that come along that have something that's just almost the exact same vision as you, except for they're like, yeah, but we don't want to use your thing. you'd be like, get the hell out of here. And then when it started working, you would be very defensive and then you'd be angry. And eventually you just, eventually there's acceptance, but like, I don't know what that looks like for somebody like Peter Schiff and all these economists too, that hinge their worth on the continuance of this facade of money being able to be properly managed by central authorities. They need that to continue because all of their models, everything that they built their career on is based on that. And when a piece of software ruins that, like what good are they at that point? You don't need economists when your entire economy is based on a piece of software that is like easily auditable by anyone. We know the metrics. We know the issuance. We don't need you to tell us the details of whether or not Jerome Powell sounded hawkish or dovish in his last Fed meeting. We don't need you to like look at the tea leaves and tell us what might come of policy because he used a certain vernacular in his last speech. It's insane the kind of bullshit that we have let be strung along this long when we could have just said, here's the supply of money. Here's how it gets issued. We know all of it. Now we can base real economic decision on that. And that's what we have now. And it's going to become more and more painfully obvious how much better it is to have the certainty of the money and then build from there your economic decisions than be like, what's Powell going to say? This week we gotta hinge all our decisions on what this dude comes out in his presser. It's insane,
truly wild. And like you hit it right on the head there. These economists, these CEOs, these investors over the past decade and two decades or decade before that, you know, they've had this theory of the internet that it wasn't going to change the world. You have Krugman, who said in the 90s that the internet was going to have the same effect as the fax machine on the stock market. And he's doubling down at this point. You know, still, these people still don't understand like what the internet has given us and then what Bitcoin is going to do with that. And I think it's really funny because I heard somebody say that, you know, the internet can have its own currency and that currency can be Bitcoin. And they were basically dismissing Bitcoin by saying that and saying it wouldn't matter to nation states. And I was laughing to myself because I was like, you know, it's funny because if the currency of the internet is Bitcoin, we pay all of our government taxes on the internet nowadays. We pay our utility bills on the internet. We pay our rent. We pay our credit. We use the internet for everything. So if the internet's going to be used for, or if Bitcoin's going to be the internet's money, then it's going to be the world's money as well.
Yeah. It's the people's money. Why bother with somebody else's currency that they issued when you have a decentralized alternative? You know, I've already opted out, like, you know, living the dream.
Yeah. And then we see just like today came out, what was it? Barclays Bank was banning their customers from, you know, using Binance. And then you start to realize, okay, whose money is it? If I can't use my money to spend it on what I want to do at a given point in time, what is the point of having money?
Yeah, it's, and they got like so many people were retweeting that and clapping back. And I mean, again, it's just a case in point. Like, I think I said something along the lines of not your bank, not your money. As the old adage with Bitcoiners goes, not your keys, not your coins. Same deal there. Like if you have value with somebody else at any point in time, they can say that you can't use it. Another great early point of that, or another great illustration of that earlier this year was the whole Wall Street Bets thing. Hey, you know, everybody wanted to speculate on particular things and all of a sudden they just weren't allowed to. You could sell it. You couldn't buy it anymore. You couldn't buy the thing that you wanted with your own money. Because they needed to protect the status quo. They needed to protect the big guys. And I think history and I guess future history will be dotted with all of these pointers as to the lessons that Bitcoin provides. There'll be so many instances of, hey, well, of course you couldn't do something eventually if somebody else didn't like it. Well, you didn't have your money. You didn't own your actual money. Of course, somebody would be able to stop you. And I look forward to and fear a number of these things happening continually in the future to the point where people finally get it. Because clearly they don't yet. They just don't. And it at this point, I don't know how much pain it's going to take for people to realize that and how many people are going to have to be hurt infinitely more than they already have been. But I don't think it'll be pretty to like actually get people to switch, to change, to take custody and responsibility for their own funds. It would have to be something pretty awful. So I don't know. I don't know how that pans out. I feel like a lot of people are maybe going to recognize the value of Bitcoin in terms of limited supply versus something like dollars or whatever their local currency may be. But I think they'll still revert to custody. And I think banks are still going to bank and banks are still going to fractional reserve. And because of that, people are still going to get burned, even though they've recognized the utility of Bitcoin. So to sum up the rant, buy Bitcoin and then hold your own keys for the love of God.
It's a great way to put it. I think that that could be on a t-shirt right there for sure. Yeah, it's just people aren't used to taking responsibility for their money or a lot of things in their life that they don't realize that they don't own if you don't truly hold it in your possession or in your own keys, in whatever it may be. It's in cyberspace, but if you don't hold those keys, you don't own that asset. And so like you said, it is a major shift. With that being said, do you think, you know, because there's been a lot of talk this year of this potentially being a super cycle and changing the way the cycles in the history of Bitcoin have worked. But you just also mentioned that you think that there needs to be a drastic shift before people start to realize that. Do you think that that could be on the horizon this time around?
I don't ascribe to the super cycle notion, at least not this time around. I mean, in a sense, Bitcoin has just been in a super cycle since it started. But like in the shorter term, which most people are referring to, like, does it just never really have a major bear market after this year? I don't think so. I think it continues down a similar path as what we've seen so far. But I think over time it'll become a little bit more muted. It won't go up as high and will go down as low. But it'll still be an excellent way of storing your value. You'll still gain a lot from holding it. If I had to guess, I still think we've got much more craziness to see this year. I think that this cooling off period where, you know, half of Twitter thinks we're in a bear market is fantastic, because I don't believe that for a second. But do I think that there's not going to be a bear market? No, I think there will be a bear market. I think we'll still see, you know, maybe it gets crazy for the end of the year or like a little bit into early next year. But I think, you know, coming calendar year end in 2022, it'll probably be down from whatever the peak ended up being significantly. And we'll probably see another, you know, couple years of not fantastic price action. And then shit gets crazy again the year following the halving next time. But I do think it's possible that through another cycle next time around, given everything that's happened this year, I think that the next 5 years could be very, very interesting in what I was talking about before, smaller nation states starting to jump on that bandwagon, more companies starting to jump on that bandwagon. I think that if we get another bear market like this time around, which I'm kind of, I anticipate, it may not be as deep and as awful as last time. But next time around, yeah, I think there's a possibility that it could go a little bit crazier, that adoption, like that hockey stick of adoption could really pick up, and that it, while being incredibly volatile, it could be, you know, the 4 year cycle is kind of out the window, and then it's just kind of more like general market movements in an upward trajectory on much shorter time frames. So yeah, at least one more cycle, I think, of the 4 year stuff. And then we'll see. We'll see how many countries are on board at that point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're pretty much in alignment there. Like I think we see it goes absolutely wild end of this year, early next year, just blows people's minds who aren't in the space, and people who are in the space also blows their mind because it's going to be completely different. But then I think it'll cool off. But I think personally, I think the cool off will look like, you know, I think a low side would be double of what it's at currently, you know, maybe the 60, yeah, 70 range personally might be like the very low side. And I think it could stay higher, like you mentioned, depending on like country and company adoption as we go through that cycle. One thing, like I was playing around with this idea for the last couple of weeks and thinking, okay, you know, maybe it goes super cycle and maybe it doesn't. And I was with some buddies and their friends, and we were all just hanging out, and somebody said that I was doing, you know, I just started this podcast. This was about a month ago. I was like two episodes in, and somebody mentioned to one of the other guys that I had started it. And I overheard him say to his buddy, he's like, oh yeah, I don't really have any Bitcoins. I have some Ethereum, and that went down the other day. I don't really know why. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, people just don't like really know. And yeah, it just made me second guess like the quote unquote super cycle side, because at some point, not everyone will need to know all the fundamentals and the basics in order for it to work. But right now I think the gap is so far.
Oh yeah. So think of what percentage of people have ever owned Bitcoin or any other coin. And think of like what percentage of those people actually get what's going on with Bitcoin. Then think of the remaining percentage of the rest of the globe that has never dabbled in anything, never owned any Bitcoin. And they've got to go through the same education that people that have finally coalesced on just Bitcoin have gone through. That's That's going to be crazy to get to that point. It's going to take so much. There's going to be so many scams. So many people are going to get burned. There's going to be so many trashy altcoins that pump and then dump and then never come back. And even the ones that seem to come back, it's just going to be that those spikes in a downward trajectory that seem like you're gaining because you have more dollars than you did the last cycle. But if you're measuring in sats, you're getting fucked. You need to make sure you're measuring in sats. There's so much more craziness to go. There's so few people that are even like holding Bitcoin, let alone understand what the hell's going on. And we've got our work cut out for us. If we want to kind of help those people along their path and maybe reduce the amount of pain that they have to feel, reduce their cost of tuition, it's a lot of work to do.
So yeah, if you're listening to this, stay focused on Bitcoin. We don't mess around with the altcoins. Just do the research, put in the time to understand what's actually going on with Bitcoin, and you'll be very happy in the long run. One thing that I think is very important with that is, like, I think Strike's doing such a good job of, they're limiting the barriers of entry and helping the on-ramps become so much smoother. I mentioned this very briefly on a pod recently, but I got my mom buying sats through Strike onto a Blue Wallet, Lightning Wallet the other day, and showing her how easy it can be. And she was excited about it. It took me only 10 minutes to explain it. And that is what we need more of, is people being able to buy easily and put in their own wallets easily. And that's the way we're going to speed up this adoption. Because like we said, you know, you don't need to understand everything to use it. You don't need to understand the way TCP/IP works to use the internet.
Yeah.
We can be the crazy people who understand the stuff at the base layer of Bitcoin, but everybody else needs to just understand it. They just need to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's capital preservation. You're preserving the fruits of your labor so that somebody can't steal your time moving forward. That's it.
You mentioned you and your wife. Did you have to, what was your process like to orange pill your wife?
I think she's just picked it up through osmosis. Like, she's just constantly around, and then I'll tell her about stuff. It was never like I had to fully orange pill her. I think like initially she's like, I don't care what you're doing. That's fine. I mean, okay, you do you. And I didn't dive in like working full time in the space, like for Bitcoin related companies, until around 2017. And that shift was, it was a tough one, because I worked for my old boss for a decade and basically helped him build out a lot of the company. And he was kind of hinting at that I may like move into a position where I might like take it over at some point and someday. And when I got into Bitcoin, I just couldn't focus on it anymore. And it was a hard phone call to make, but when I did it, I had the full support of my wife. She said, I trust you and you're passionate about this. And, you know, as long as we can put food on the table, then here we go. And since then our lives have improved and she sees them improving. And she knows it's volatile as hell. But like, I think there's been a few moments where I've been like, oh, you know stuff. I'm so excited. Like, she'll say something that I didn't think she understood, or she'll say something like, I don't know, do we need to pay for that right now? Because like, I'd rather not, you know, I'd rather have more money in Bitcoin for a longer period of time. And I'm like, yes. And then her friend the other day was asking about getting Bitcoin, and then said something along the lines of, but there's a bunch of other ones that I heard about. And like, I'm out of the room and I hear my wife say, yeah, but they're all shit coins. I'm like, yes, you're learning. So she knows what's up. And there's times where I'll see a tweet from somebody and I'll be like, look at this, what do you think about that? And she'll look at it and it'll be something relatively technical or something that to do with how Bitcoin works. And she'll be like, that's stupid. That's not right. Like, I know that's not how it works. And I feel this swell of pride that she's picked all this stuff up, and she always assumes that she doesn't understand, but she understands way better than most people just from having been around it.
That's awesome. That's got to make you feel proud and happy that she's picking up on it. And you don't even have to jump in on the altcoin arguments with her friend or anything like that. Yeah. My girlfriend has been, listening to my podcast and asking questions here and there. And then she told me she like watched a Bitcoin documentary the other day. And I was like, I was hyped. I was like, yeah, she's getting it, like starting to figure out what's going on. And so it's nice, you know, when the people around you and like I mentioned, my mom, my sister, and my dad, and those are the people I'm making this podcast for, to, you know, try and help them understand like what's truly going on, and that we have an exit route to try and help ourselves out and, you know, help our friends understand what's going on. So it's always fun when people start to listen, and then you can see that in their life as well. I don't know what age your kids are. Are they at any point of age where they understand like money system and what's going on with that?
They're pretty young. So I've got a newborn. Well, he's like 3 months old.
Congrats.
Thank man. Yeah. And then I've got a daughter, and she is turning 4 pretty soon here in a few weeks. She's just at the age where it's starting, like she knows that things cost money and that you use your time to earn money at a job, or you work in order to earn money. And then that's how, like, she understands that if we want to buy something, like if she wants just like all of the toys from everywhere, it's not like we just have money. It's that, you know, dad has to go and be in his office and do things that people will pay him for, that takes time away from us spending together in order to get that money to go buy those things. So she's starting to make those connections. She knows the word Bitcoin. She knows that it's different from like the coins and bills that she sees. She knows like that you can tap cards and pay for things. So she's like, it's those early cursory stages of just understanding transacting. So she also knows how to say have fun staying poor. So I've been working on that too. But so far, yeah, it's just the initial stages. But like, you can't explain scarcity in any meaningful way to like a 3-year-old going on 4, right? So I'm just focusing on like your time is exchanged for money, which can then be exchanged for other stuff. And that's, you know, again, this is the whole concept of the show. Explain it like I'm 5, and she's not even 5 yet. So I got to take those baby steps and have her understand transacting before I can get into money. Why is this worth more than that? You know, maybe I'll start doing the, you know, where you have like a whole bunch of like one color of cookie and then just one of the other color, and then see which one she picks, and then like start to try and attack it that way. Oh, why'd you pick that one? Oh, it's the only red one. Yeah, I see. There's a lot of green ones over there, but you could have any one of those anytime. Get that red one.
There you go. Start to attack the different levels of the money system that way. Yeah. I like that. Maybe you've got a children's book in you as well one day.
You never know.
You seem to be a man of many talents. You just got to see how far you can spread it. So that'd be a good one.
I can teach Bitcoin through the art of dance.
There you go. You also, maybe you got to teach her the word fiat as well. Maybe you just point to the trash can every time and you say fiat.
Anything that sucks is fiat. I'll just, that'll be the new one. I also, did you see, I know I'm kind of derailing this here, but did you see the Financial Times article asking people to stop calling government money fiat? Like, how much are we winning the narrative right now? Like, it's hilarious.
I would love for you to go on a little rant about that. Like, so for those of you who don't know, Financial Times just put out an article asking to stop calling the US dollars fiat because of the implications around what fiat means. So Ben, I feel like you should just take this one away.
Well, it's just, So, I mean, Bitcoiners for a long time have been referring to fiat currency, which it means by decree. Like, it only has value because somebody says it does and enforces that in some way, shape, or form. And that's what we get with US dollars, Canadian dollars, euros, whatever. It's, there's nothing backing it. There's no like sound money actually backing it anymore. It's literally just printed on command, and it has value because a government says it does, and because they'll take it for their taxes. And, you know, like for me, I'm not like, ooh, I can't wait to own some of that stuff that I have to give back for taxes. Like it's not. So anyways, this article just goes on to say, it was basically just arguing that the word fiat is derogatory towards the money, when that's literally just the definition of what the money is. It's a fiat currency. And now it is derogatory because Bitcoiners have dubbed it so. If I say that something is fiat, if I say someone has a fiat mindset, it means that they're thinking short term, they have no vision for the future, and they're doing things that really don't benefit them in any way, shape, or form. They're not thinking beyond the first order effects. When I say fiat food, I mean stuff that's going to taste good right now and then make me feel like trash later. When I say a fiat, I don't know, there's so many fiat things, fiat purchases, crappy little trinkety things that are going to sit around your house and break and you'll never really use. There's so many fiat things. And it's funny to see the defense go up now, because it's no longer offense. It's no longer like, I mean, there's a little bit of offense. There's like the same FUD that we saw over the past 4 years, just recycled. But like, that was almost disappointing FUD. It was stuff that we've heard before. It's just that new people came in and hadn't heard it as much yet, so they brought it up again. This is like, we need to make sure that people don't start believing that dollars are crap, which is like, that's how you know when we're winning, when they're like, please don't call it that. That's so mean. I can't wait for fiat to become a more widely used derogatory term, because it's trash. It's a trash thing, and it should be a word to describe things that are trashy.
Completely agree. Tomer, I had Tomer on a week or two ago, and we had a whole segment on how he thinks the word fiat will be like a future, almost like swear word, like derogatory. And I couldn't agree more. Like, also Anthony Pompliano, he went on a comedian's like little podcast thing. I think it was Andrew Schultz, maybe something like that. And he was calling them fiat bros as a yes. joke of saying that they didn't have any Bitcoin. And so I like started joking with my buddies. I was like, hey, until you guys own Bitcoin, you guys are just gonna be my fiat bros. And so like, I think it's a great way and to like help people understand. And it's funny that it's like the meme has literally grown to the Financial Times being upset about it.
I'm going to start throwing that out with my friends. Like, that's gotta be like, I'm going to see some people on the weekend. Somebody does something stupid, I'll be like, ah, dude, that's such a fiat decision. Come on. Come on, man. What the hell are you thinking?
I think you get to catch on pretty quick. Yeah, it'll stick for sure. People really know what fiat means now. And it was interesting listening to, I believe it was Dominic Frisby. He was talking on Breed Love's podcast, and he wrote a book in early 2000s, and he had explained what fiat meant to everybody, you know, back in 2004 or 2005. Nowadays everybody knows, and if they don't, it's a very easy explanation. We're in a completely different time now, and people are really starting to see the writing on the wall. I think people are starting to wake up to the facts of what's really going on behind our monetary system, because every time you see $1 trillion printed for this and $2 trillion printed for that and $6 trillion proposed and printed for another thing, it's like, where is our money going? Yeah. It wakes you up pretty quickly. And I know the US and Canada have had a lot of that in the last year.
Yeah, it's been wild. Like, again, it's one of the first times I've seen people legitimately asking, well, how can they just print all that money? And like, if they're printing all that money, Like if they can just print it, why am I paying taxes? Like if there's no negative effects, as they're saying, if there's no negative effects to them doing that, why are they just printed all of the tax money for like years and years to come? Why are we paying it? So like people are just asking those very simple questions, and there's no answers coming at them from the government. There's answers coming at them from people that understand how worthless the system is. And those answers seem to be satisfactory for a lot of people, because they're kind of opening their eyes to what a joke everything is.
Yeah, I think it was like $800 billion were printed at one point during like the 2008-2009 financial crisis.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad like trying to explain to me like how much money that was, and like he was basically like just describing it as, that's just so much money, we can't wrap our heads around it. And it doesn't make sense that they're just like printing this. And then over the last year, we see just like $1 trillion thrown out left and right. And I'm like thinking back to that argument he made 12 years ago now. And I'm like, okay, wait, that's broken. That can't be sustained.
It accelerates, right? Like when you set the precedent for $800 billion and that sloshes around the system and we experience the asset inflation that we do, the price of houses that go up, price of anything actually important where people will park money goes up. And then, yeah, we see prices of general items go up as well. But once that sloshes around and it doesn't fix the problem, and sorry, ignore my camera just turning off now, I'm going to switch out the battery. But when that doesn't fix the problem, and then there's a bigger crash down the line with even more money sloshing around, in order to further correct that problem, and I say correct as in like quote unquote correct, they need exponentially more money to do it. And what do we see out the gate? The first print was like, I can't remember even if it was 3 trillion or 6. It doesn't even matter. The fact that I'm saying a number with a T at the front should be astounding to everyone. And now it's like commonplace. Like the Biden administration just said that their projected yearly budget, they wanted to do $6 trillion a year all the way to 2030 or 2031, something like that. And at which point it would continue kind of growing. And they said it would max out at a yearly budget of like 8.3 trillion or whatever the hell the number was. It was like eight something. And he's like, and then we'd start cutting back. Like, of course, at that point, like assuming that he did a full 8 years, it would be another administration that would be responsible for that. So he'd be clear. And of course, the new administration is going to come in and be like, all right, we know that Biden just got out of here, assuming that he made it that long. And we know that you guys are used to all this money being printed and, you know, stock prices going up because we're buying all the equities and everything, and house prices going up. But we're going to stop spending. In fact, we're going to go and we're going to make sure that we do some austerity measures to start to bring down the debt. As no politician in their right mind is going to campaign on that, let alone do it. It's a joke. It's a sham. What he's really saying is we're going to print money forever, and we're going to say that the next guy will stop, but realistically, they're just going to do what we did 10x.
It's honestly crazy. Like just what's going on in the system right now. It's unsustainable, and they know it, and everybody else deep down knows it. They just don't want to admit it. And I saw a stat of last week. I think it was the S&P 500 set a new all-time high every single day last week or something absurd. And you're like, that doesn't seem normal. Like, and like, there's no major economic boom or announcements or anything going on right now. And we're like, how is this happening?
You saw it the entire last year when the entirety of the economy was effectively ground to a halt. Nobody was working. Unemployment was at historical all-time highs, and the stock market was pumping. Like, what does that say? Like, never has there been a better illustration of the disconnect between what we measure as like successful for the country versus the real felt effects by the average blue collar worker. You know, stocks are up. We're doing great. No, you're not. People are hurting. People are out of work. People are starving. People, like, businesses are closing. And now that it's been, people have been, especially here in Canada, where people have been subsidized to not work with printed money, nobody wants to go back to work. Now businesses are trying to survive and open because they're finally allowed to, and they can't get workers because people want money to do nothing and sit at home. Everything is broken. They've broken so much stuff this past year. It's insane.
There's going to be a wake-up call at some point. I hope the transition, I mean, because there's going to be a couple. There's going to be a wake-up call in just the total money system as a whole at some point switching to Bitcoin, but there's also probably going to be a major, you know, market collapse at some point as well. And they're probably going to be separate things, but I just really hope, you know, too many people aren't hurt. And then, you know, you have zero, you're basically free debt being offered right now, especially for people buying homes. So everyone and their brother is going to buy a house right now, and the housing market's going through the roof. What happens when they stop printing money? What happens when they raise the interest rates? Because you can't keep it at zero forever, and you can't keep printing money forever. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, they can, but then you get currency collapse. That's the thing. Like, those are the options. And I think that's what they're going to go with. Because they're going to raise interest rates? The whole bond market will be destroyed. What, are they going to stop printing money and pumping it into the system? You have people out there parking their money in speculative stocks because they can't get a return on regular interest rates for bonds. They, the money is flowing to places where the people can see a return, but they're not real returns. It's like there's nowhere else to go. And so we're going to pump up the price of these equities. We're going to, I mean, I can't remember what institutions it were that it was, but they're going and they're just buying up real estate across the country right now, like major banks. And they're not putting people in those homes. They're just letting them sit empty. Because it's like one of the few places you can just kind of park money right now. So it's like they saw the risk of the mortgage debt from before. So what's the new game? Well, we'll just buy the houses and nobody will be in them. Like, this is the kind of craziness that you get into. And like, think of the opposite. Think of if we just had money that just did what it was supposed to do. What if you just had money and you could just hold it? And at least it retained its value and had like some general small rate of deflation just because of, like, you know, the population growth. You know, there's same amount of money from more people continually. Well, all of a sudden, the people that just want to save, or that would have invested in smaller things, easier returns, and probably just hold their money. And then the actual investment that would be happening, because you're no longer afraid of your money losing value and purchasing power, because you can just hold it and afford more over time, the investment would be a lot more measured. You'd be looking and saying, well, my purchasing power is gradually going up. Do I want to risk that guaranteed increase in purchasing power for this investment? Oh, well, I better do my research. I better take a look at this company and see if they're actually pretty sound, if they know what they're doing, if they're going to make a profit or not. It shifts the entire dynamic to reason, to actually assessing where your money is going, instead of YOLOing into some bullshit on Robinhood or being a major institution that is forced to take your company's profits and buy up homes and price out the vast majority of Americans from actually ever owning a home, just because you need a place to park your cash. It's the dynamics are and incentives are so screwed up that I don't see a fix that will actually be enacted outside of just a gradual push towards currency collapse. Cause there's no, what do you do?
Yeah. It's sad to see the way it's going and, you know, what's been going on for the past couple of years. Cause like, I think we were on the verge of a recession even before the pandemic happened. And, it was kind of a nice little timing for the government to use this, oh, we'll print the money and, you know, save the recession from coming and kick the can down the road. And then it got passed to the next president. And then now it's, you know, he'll try and see how long he can do it until the next one as well. If you had to speculate, what like long-term, what do you see happening? How do you see like the transition to Bitcoin playing out in the long run?
I think it's tough to say because there are certain things that could accelerate it quite a bit, but I'm not convinced that everybody would truly get it that quickly all at once. And that's why I think we'll still see volatility and cycles and ups and downs. But in terms of like what's going to actually go down, I think realistically you're going to see people actually start to understand inflation. People start to actually understand, oh, if I save my money, this isn't going to work for me very well, and understand that they need to put their money elsewhere. But I think from that, you see a lot more speculation around just about anything. And I think they're going to group Bitcoin in with that speculation. And I think it's going to take time to separate it out. And I don't quite know how that works. I think we're doing a good job of getting content out there in and around why, but it's going to have to become like a cultural norm where people just, it's a given. Oh, Bitcoin is just good money. And if you just want to save Bitcoin, you just save in Bitcoin. I think that narrative has to take hold. And I think that might take a while. I think it might take longer than people think. But in terms of like the price of Bitcoin going crazy, I think it can still go a lot crazier than it is right now without people understanding or without the average person understanding. So I don't know.
Yeah, man. I definitely agree. And one statement I've heard is there's something like 48, 49 million millionaires in the world, and there's only 21 million Bitcoin. So there's not enough Bitcoin in the world for every millionaire to have one. And so at some point you're going to start getting like the FOMO and, you know, the people with real life wealth sort of be like, wait, am I missing something? Like what's happening? I need to get in on this before I miss it completely and even further, because they've had opportunities through the years to buy lower and they've missed them.
Yeah, man. I was just looking at, what's the global population right now? It's like,
it's closing in on 8 billion. I feel like last time I saw it was like 7.6 or 7.8.
Yeah. So I had been looking at what was the average, like if it was equally distributed amongst the entire population of Earth, was that million, billion? Yeah. Each person would have 0.0026 Bitcoin. So each person would have basically 260,000 sats. That's it. Like if it was, and obviously it wouldn't be evenly distributed, but that's, you know, if you have over 260,000 sats, you're already doing pretty well in my books. You know, a million sats, you're a sat millionaire. It's pretty solid. Like, you know, take those baby steps. You don't need to have a whole Bitcoin. Like I'd say that's out of reach for the average person now. Well, for sure out of reach for most people nowadays. Who has like $30,000, $35,000, whatever, of disposable income, like immediately, let alone over the course of say a calendar year from your job. let alone if the price, like, that's dependent on the price staying absolutely put. Like, nobody has that extra money in terms of like your blue collar, you know, I work a 9 to 5 and got 35 grand kicking around to grab a Bitcoin. It's just, you know, focus on the sats, stack a million sats. You're set. You're good.
Yeah. That's the message I've been really trying to get across to my friends is, hey, like, yeah, the price is high right now. Guarantee the price goes up in the future. And that, and like, I will guarantee that it's going to go up, and it's just math at the end of the day. And, you know, just trying to encourage them, hey, just, I know your $100 a week or whatever you may be able to do doesn't feel like it's doing that much, but it really is in the long run when you look at what this thing's going to do.
Yeah. I feel like guaranteed, and I'm being very conservative here, I feel like guaranteed in the next decade, we have $1 million Bitcoin, which means we have one sat equals 1 cent. Right. And so at that point, like, if you're stacking sats, imagine you're buying pennies for way less than a penny. You know, like right now, a single US dollar will buy you about 3,000 sats, roughly. And so you just, for a dollar, you just bought 3,000 pennies. You just bought $30. You know, like if you think about it that way, great, stack all the sats you can. I'll gladly buy 3,000 pennies for 100 pennies.
Exactly. You make a trade, and you, like you talked about earlier, delayed gratification. You look at, okay, if I don't need that money for the next year, 6 years, mm-hmm. 6 months, whatever it may be for you personally, that's a better investment to put it into Bitcoin and start to see it grow in nominal terms of dollars.
Yeah.
And
think long-term too. I tend to tell people when I say, okay, if you're saving in Bitcoin, don't think like, you know, if you're looking at this and saying, I'm going to absolutely need that money, like in a few months here, because I have a major bill coming up. You're thinking too short term, because anything can happen in the short term, but all of us know that Bitcoin is here to stay, that it's going to exist, that there's a limited number, that more people are using it over time. We know those things. We can see the on-chain metrics of more activity over time. We can see the FUD disappearing, but you never know what's going to happen inside of a few month period. So it's like, you know, start thinking with that low time preference, like 5 years, at least think 10 years in the future, you know, like they think further out, think like, what would it mean to me to take $100 and purchase, what would that be? 3,000, 30,000, 300,000 pennies, 30 grand for $100. You know, like that's pretty meaningful. So like, think of your future self, do a favor for your future self and just start learning about Bitcoin and stack some sats.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And I do think that is a great way to kind of end this night, as I know you got kids that you've already put to bed and got to wrap up, and I got work in the morning. I have one final question for you today. If you had 2 hours, you know, sit down over dinner with anybody, dead or alive, we'll assume that they, you know, they know about the internet, they understand what it does, and you could tell them about Bitcoin. You could ask them questions about Bitcoin. You could tell them about what you think it can do for humanity. Who would that be and why?
Oh, damn. This is a good question. I would be curious, just because he was a very kind of critical, interesting thinker. Carl Sagan might be a cool guy. He, like, you know, he did the original, what's that show that Neil deGrasse Tyson did Cosmos, like the science show. And I think they had Cosmos on some network, but he was, you know, he's more astrophysics and everything like that. But to discuss the implications of Bitcoin on humanity as a species moving forward, and the efficiencies that it would grant us in truly understanding what's important, having a solid handle on where to best allocate capital to get rid of all of the fiat businesses, the fiat products, and to truly focus on like long-term thinking and thrust our minds into that generational mindset of like, hey, we're going to start a project that we may never live to see the fruition of, but our ancestors will. I'd be curious to talk, given that he's looks out at space and how infinite it is, you know, what does that do to us in terms of our ability to explore and our ability to move our species forward, to learn more about our surroundings and actually grow and, you know, it's getting pretty cosmic here, but like become interplanetary and actually go out and build lives outside of where we've always been. I'd be curious to have that conversation with him, because I think about this a lot in terms of what kind of advancements we would have had if we were as efficient as Bitcoin allows us to be. What kind of cool things would we have built? What kind of things would we have accomplished in the name of humanity over these past, you know, there's been many instances of going into fiat standards off and on and like quasi fiat standards. If we had just like the full unbridled efficiency of Bitcoin and the full truth of our economic stature in front of us, what would we have accomplished? And what will that make us accomplish in comparison to where we are now? I think that'd be a great conversation.
Definitely sounds like it would be, and be a perfect person to pick their brain and let, you know, hear their thoughts on the matter. So Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. Tell the people where they can find you, and I will have links to all your stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, man. First of all, thanks for having me. Great conversation. Really enjoyed it. People can find me. Best two places are on YouTube, of course, for the show. Just search BTC Sessions, and on Twitter, the exact same thing, at BTC Sessions, all one word.
Perfect. Like I said, that'll all be in the show notes. And then, I appreciate you, and we'll talk soon for sure.
Thanks, man.
Like I warned you from the beginning, Ben really crushed this episode, came out with a lot of energy, and killed it for us today and teaching us a lot. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I hope you're enjoying the show as a whole. If you are, please feel free to give me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And also you can subscribe on Spotify. Those things really help me out. As always, you can find me at E3BTC on all social media or E3BTC.com if you have any questions. Thanks once again for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next one. Take us away, bro.